welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. As you know, we cover the facts on the Constitution. We will actually tell you how the framers defined the Constitution. We're not going to editorialize on their words. Well, I kind of do, but I don't actually, excuse me, I don't editorialize on their words without you hearing them. I want you to hear as I have heard them, and as I read them to you, you agree with my perspective, because I believe that this, my perspective, is the right perspective. And I believe that when you listen to, and once you see how Madison and all of the framers lay this all out, it becomes a unification on the concept that the states, who are the parties to the compact or to the Constitution, the states are the only entity that has the legal authority to determine what violations and what the remedies to those violations are and must be. Anyway, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And we want to thank you for tuning in. Haven't done that for a while. Please utilize these debates in getting other people to tune in. Oh, it's kind of like listening to a class. Well, yeah, we're not here to get you to start thinking on something that will have no impact on solving our problem. Everything you hear in the news is just a marketing. Do you just turn on TV to watch the television for its commercials and marketing? Or do you look for content? Well, I'm telling you, the news is only marketing to say we must act. We must act now and so forth. So anyway, we want to get into the North Carolina ratification debate. So we've kind of left everything to where it is. And so what we're going to do is start off with Mr. Davey, who actually gave us a really good input. And I'm going to take over from where we had left off. Anyway, what he says is, with respect to its operation of our own paper money, I believe that a little consideration will satisfy every man that it cannot have the effect asserted by the gentleman from Hanover. The federal convention knew that several states had large sums of paper money in circulation and that it was an interesting property that they were sensible that those states would never consent to its immediate destruction or ratify any system that would have that operation. The mischief already done could not be repaired. All that could be done was to form some limitation to this great political evil, such as printing paper money. As the paper money had become private and the object of numberless contracts, it could not be destroyed or intermeddled with in that simulation, although its baneful tendency was obvious and undeniable. It was, however, affecting an important part to put bounds to this growing mischief. If the states had been compelled to sink the paper money, they instantly, the remedy would be worse than the disease, as we could not put an immediate end to it if we were to contend with prohibiting its future increase, looking forward to its entire extinguishment, when the states that had an emission circulating would be able to call it by a gradual redemption. In Pennsylvania, their paper money was not tender in discharge of private contracts. In South Carolina, their bills became eventually a tender. And in Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey, and North Carolina, the paper money was made a legal tender in all cases whatsoever. The other states were sensible that the destruction of the circulating paper would be a violation of the rights of private property, and that such a measure would render the accession of those states to system absolutely impracticable. The influence and pernicious tendencies of this disgraceful policy were viewed with great indignation by the states which adhered to the principles of justice. In Rhode Island, the paper money had depreciated to 8 for 1. That's considerable. And basically, that's almost where we're at today. And 100% with us, the people of Massachusetts and Connecticut, have been great sufferers by the dishonesty of Rhode Island. And similar complaints existed against this state. This clause became, in some measure, a preliminary with the gentleman who represented the other states. You, quote, you have, close quote, said they, quote, by your iniquitous laws and paper emissions shamefully defraud our citizens, the Confederation. Okay. So our citizens, the Confederation prevented our compelling you to do them justice. But before we confederate with you again, you must not only agree to be honest, but to put it out of your paper to be otherwise. Sir, a member from Rhode Island itself could not have set his face against such language. The clause was, I believe, unanimously assented to. It has only a future aspect and by no means can have a retrospective operation. And I trust the principles upon the convention preceded will meet the approbation of every honest man. Okay, so there you go. Kind of closes up on the currency. Now, they're obviously kind of circle around on some things, and one of the things that they circled around on was ex post facto laws. So Mr. Iredell pipes in and provides some clarity on ex post facto laws. He says, Mr. Chairman, with respect to this clause, it cannot have the operation contended for. There is nothing in the Constitution which affects our present paper money. It prohibits the future, the emitting of any, but it does not interfere with the paper money now actually in circulation in several states. There is an express clause which protects it. It provides that there shall be no ex post facto law. This would be ex post facto if the construction contended for were right as been observed by any other gentleman. If a suit were brought against a man in the federal court and execution should go against his property, I apprehend he would, under this Constitution, have a right to pay our paper money, there being nothing in the Constitution taking away the validity of it. Every individual of the United States will keep his eye watchfully over those who administer the general government, and no usurpation of power will be acquiesced in. Well, at least not for a while, at least for about 20, 30 years, until they can start bamboozling people and getting them to ascend and or agree to these bad federal government or general government usurpations. The possibility of usurping powers ought not to be objected against. Abuse may happen in government. The only resource against usurpation is the inherent right of the people to prevent its exercise, which is the states doing that. This is the case in all free governments in the world. The people will resist if the government usurps powers not delegated to it. We must run the risk of abuse. We must take care it to give it no more power than is necessary. But having given that, we must submit to the possible dangers arising from it. With respect to the great weight of the northern states, it will not, on a candid examination, appear so great as to the gentleman supposes. At present, the regulation of our representation is merely temporary. Whether greater or less, it will hereafter depend on actual population. The extent of the state is very great, almost equal to that of any state in the Union, and our population will probably be in proportion. To the north, Pennsylvania, there are 27 votes. To the south of Pennsylvania, there are 30 votes, leaving Pennsylvania out. Pennsylvania has 8 votes in the decision of what is so-called northern and southern interest. Pennsylvania does not appear to be decidedly on either scale. Though there may be a combination of the northern states, it is not certain that the interest of Pennsylvania will coincide with theirs. If at any time she join us, we shall have 38 states against 27. she should be against us, then they will have only 35 to 30. There are two states in the northward who have, in some respect, a similarity of interest with ours. What is the situation of New Jersey? It is, in one respect, similar to ours. Most of the goods they use come through New York, and they pay for the benefit of New York as we pay that for Virginia. It is so with Connecticut, so that in every question between importing and non-importing states, we may expect that the two of the northern states would probably join with North Carolina. It is impossible to destroy altogether this idea of separate interests. But the difference between the states does not appear to me so great as the gentleman imagines. I beg leave to say that in a proportion to the increase of population of the southern states will have greater weight than the northern, as they have such large quantities of land still uncultivated, which is not much to the case of the north. If we should suffer a small temporary inconvenience, we shall be compensated for it by having the weight of our population in our favor. And so kind of identifies the fact and protection of an ex post facto law. But we're out of time, and what we're going to do is we're going to go into this break, and when we come back, we will get back into, and actually we will find that it seems like Mr. Davey might be carrying over some comments from the previous day. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now there's going to be a change in focus, because as they go through the Constitution, they start covering other things. And so Mr. Henry Abbott, now that they get into Article 6, they identify the lack of religious test. And as you know, there's two sides to this. Those who want it and those who don't. After a short exordium, which was not distinctly heard, proceeded, "Thus, some are afraid, Mr. Chairman, that should the Constitution be received, they would be deprived of the privilege of worshiping God according to their conscience, which would be taking from them a benefit they enjoy under the present Constitution." Wow. They wish to know if their religious and civil liberties be secured under this system. Now, just so you understand, civil liberties, that is about religious expression, those inalienable rights, or whether the general government may not make laws infringing their religious liberties. The worthy member from Edmonton mentioned sundry political reasons why treaties should be the supreme law of the land. It is feared by some that by the power of making treaties, they might make a treaty engaging with foreign powers to adopt the Roman Catholic religion in the United States. Now, here we go. I'm just going to pause right there. Is there any enumerated power within the Constitution for religion? Any? Not in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but when they were ratifying it, the only mention of religion was there was to be no religious tests. So if they don't have the enumerated power, they can't make a treaty dictating either way on any issue of religion, either way, because it's not an enumerated power. And it's clear that they can only make laws and they can only make treaties regarding the powers that they've been delegated. Since there is zero delegation of religious powers, they can't make a treaty with it. So he goes on and says, which would prevent the people from worshiping God according to their own conscience. The worthy member from Halifax has in some measure satisfied Ray Mind on this subject. But, and I think that Ray Mind may be remind on this subject, but others may be dissatisfied. Many wish to know what religion shall be established. I believe a majority of the community are Presbyterian. I am, for my part, against any exclusive establishment, but if there were any, I would prefer the Episcopal. The exclusion of religious tests is by many thought dangerous and impolitic. They suppose that if there be no religious test required, pagans, deists, and Mohammedans might obtain offices from us, and that the senators and representatives might all be pagans. Every person employed by the general and state governments is to take an oath to support the former. Some are desirous to know how and by whom they are to swear, since no religious test is required. Whether they are to swear to Jupiter, Juno, Minerva, Proserpine, or Pluto. We ought to be suspicious of our liberties. We have felt the effects of oppressive measures and know the happy consequences of jealous of our rights. I would be glad some gentlemen would endeavor to obviate these objections in order to satisfy the religious art of the society. Could I be convinced that the objections were well-founded, I would then declare my opinion against the Constitution. Mr. Abbott added several other observations, but spoke too low to be heard. So Mr. Iredell then responds, Mr. Chairman, nothing is more desirable than to remove the scruples of any gentleman on this interesting subject. Those concerning religion are entitled to particular respect. I did not expect any objection to this particular regulation, which, in my opinion, is calculated to prevent evils of the most pernicious conspiracy to society. Every person in the least conversant in the history of mankind knows what dreadful mischiefs have been committed by religious persecutions. Under the color of religious tests, the utmost cruelties have been exercised. Those in power have generally considered all wisdom centered in themselves, that they alone had a right to dictate the rest of mankind, and that all opposition to their tenets was profane and impious. The consequences of this intolerant spirit had been that each church has in turn set itself up against every other, and persecutions and wars of the most implacable and bloody nature have taken place in every part of the world. America has set an example to mankind to think more modestly and reasonably, that a man may be of different religious sentiments from our own without being a bad member of society. The principles of toleration to the honor of this age are doing away with those errors and prejudices which have so long prevailed, even in the most intolerant countries. In the Roman Catholic countries, principles of moderation are adopted, which would have spurned at a century ago or two. I should be sorry to find when the examples of toleration are set even by arbitrary governments that this country, so impressed with the high sense of liberty, should adopt principles on this subject that were narrow and illiberal. I consider the clause under consideration as one of the strongest proofs that it could be adduced that it was the intention of those who formed this system to establish a religious liberty in America. Were we to judge from the examples of religious tests in other countries, we should be persuaded that they do not answer the purpose for which they are intended. What is the consequence of such in England? In that country, no man can be a member of the House of Commons or hold any office under the crown without taking the sacrament according to the rites of the church. This is the first instance must degrade and profane a rite which never ought to be taken from a sincere principle of devotion. To a man of base principles, it is made mere instrument of civil policy. The intention was to exclude all persons from offices but the members of the Church of England. Yet it is notorious that dissenters qualify themselves for offices in this manner, though they never conform to the church on any other occasion. And men of no religion at all have no scruple to make use of this qualification. It never was known that a man who had no principles of religion hesitated to perform any rite when he was convenient for his private interest. No test can bind such a one. I am therefore clearly of opinion that such a discrimination would neither be effectual for its own purposes, nor, if it could, ought to by any means be made. Under the principles I have stated, I confess the restriction of the power of Congress in this particular as my hearty approbation. They certainly have no authority to interfere in the establishment of any religion whatsoever. And I'm astonished that any gentleman could conceive they have. Is there a power given to Congress in matters of religion? Can they pass a single act to impair our religious liberties? If they could, it would be a just cause of alarm. If they could, sir, no man would have more honor against it than myself. Happily, no sect here is superior to another. As long as this is the case, we shall be free from those persecutions and distractions with which other countries have been torn. If any future Congress should pass an act concerning the religion of the country, it would be an act which they are not authorized to pass by the Constitution and which the people would not obey. Everyone would ask, quote, who authorized the government to pass such an act? Is it not warranted by the Constitution and is barefaced usurpation? The power to make treaties can be supposed to be included in a right to establish a foreign religion among ourselves, though it might authorize a toleration of others. But it is objected that the people of America may perhaps choose representatives who have no religion at all, and that pagans and Mohammedans may be admitted into office. But how is it possible to exclude any set of men? Without taking away the principle of religious freedom, which we ourselves so warmly contend for. This is the foundation on which persecution has been raised in every part of the world. The people in power were always right, and everybody else was wrong. If you admit the least difference, the door to persecution is opened. Nor would it answer the purpose. For the worst part, the excluded sects would comply to the test, and the best men only to keep out of councils. But it is never to be supposed that the people of America will trust their dearest rights to persons who have no religion at all. or a religion materially different from their own, it would be happy for mankind if religion was permitted to take its own course and maintain itself by the excellence of its own doctrines. The divine author of our religion never wished for its support by worldly authority. He has not said that the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. He hath made greater progress for itself than when supported by the greatest authority upon the earth. So anyway, that kind of wraps up his comments as far as Mr. Iredell responding here. So anyway, we will be right back with a little bit more religion from Iredell right after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so this religious tone continuing. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting. We got a lot of feedback in the Massachusetts regarding religion, but this is surprisingly a lot of feedback, especially from a slave state, which was more founded on commercial interest than religious interest. And so here we find a lot of objections and clarifications regarding religion. And if you look at, you know, the exclusion of religion, other than the concept of the religious test, you go, wow, I mean, that's really driving a lot of conversation here. Anyway, Mr. Iredell says this, according to the modern definition of an oath, it is considered a solemn appeal to the supreme being for the truth of what is said by a person who believes in the existence of supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments according to that form which will bind his conscience most. That's very interesting, right? So anyway, it was long held that no oath could be administered but upon the New Testament, except a Jew who was allowed to swear upon the old. According to this notion, none of the Jews and Christians could take an oath, and heathens altogether were excluded. At length, by the operation of principles of toleration, these narrow motions were done away. Men at length considered that they were many virtuous men of the world who had not had an opportunity of being instructed either in the Old or New Testament, who yet very sincerely believed in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments, like a heaven. It is well known that many nations entertain this belief who do not believe either in the Jewish or Christian religion. Indeed, there are few people so grossly ignorant or barbarous as to have no religion at all. And if none but Christians or Jews could be examined upon oath, many innocent persons might suffer for want of the testimony of others. In regard to the form of an oath that ought to be governed by the religion of the person taking it, I remember to have read an instance which happened in England, I believe in the time of Charles II. A man who was a material witness in a cause refused to swear upon the book and was admitted to swear with his uplifted hand. The jury had a difficulty in crediting him, but the Chief Justice told them that he had, in his opinion, taken as strong as an oath as any other witnesses, though he had been to swear himself, he should have kissed the book. A very remarkable instance also happened in England about 40 years ago of a person who was admitted to take an oath according to the rites of his own country, though he was a heathen. If he was an East Indian who had great suit in Chancery, and his answer upon his oath to a bill filled against him with absolute necessary. Not believing either in the Old or New Testament, he could not be sworn in the accustomed manner, but was sworn in according to the form and gentle religion which he professed by touching the foot of the priest. It appeared that according to the tenets of this religion, its members believed in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. It was accordingly held by the judges upon the great consideration that the oath ought to be received. They considered that it was probable those of that religion were equally bound in conscience by an oath according to their form of swearing as they themselves were by one of theirs, and that it would be reproach to the justice of the country if a man merely because he was of a different religion from their own should be denied redress of an injury he had sustained. Ever since this great cause, it has been universally considered that in administering an oath, it is only necessary to inquire if the permission who is to take it believes in a supreme being and in a future state of rewards and punishments. If he does not, the oath has been administered according to the form which it is supposed will bind his conscience most. It is, however, necessary that such a belief should be entertained, because otherwise there would be nothing to bind conscience that could be relied on, since there are many cases where the terror of punishment in this world for perjury could not be dreaded. I have endeavored to satisfy the committee. We may, I think, very safely leave religion to itself, and as the form of the oath, I think this may be well trusted to the general government to be applied on the principles I have mentioned. Now, Mr. Johnston gets up, and I think this is where he really starts talking about Mohammedans getting office and so forth, and yep, it's all about religion here. And Mr. Johnston, the governor, says this, expressed great astonishment that the people were alarmed on the subject of religion. This, he said, must have arisen from the great pains which had been taken to prejudice men's minds against the Constitution. He believed to add to the following observations to what had been so ably stated by the gentleman last up. I read the Constitution over and over, but I could not see one cause of apprehension or jealousy on this subject. When I heard there were apprehensions that the Pope of Rome could be the President of the United States, I was greatly astonished. It might as well be said that, the King of England or France or the Grand Turk could have been chosen to that office. It would have been as good an argument. It appears to me that it would have been dangerous if Congress could intermeddle with the subject of religion. Now, truth be told, the King, Turk, and you know, France or what have you, I'm here to tell you that the natural-born citizen would keep them from being qualified. Anyway, when any attempt is made by any government to restrain men's conscience, no good consequence could possibly follow. It is apprehended that the Jews, Mohammedans, pagans, etc. may be elected to high offices under the government of the United States. Those who are Mohammedans or any others who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to the office of president or other higher office by one of the two cases. First, if the people of America lay aside the Christian religion altogether, it may happen. Should this unfortunate take place, the people will choose such men as they think as they do themselves. Another case is if persons of such descriptions should, notwithstanding their religion acquired by the confidence and the esteem, as the esteem of the people of America by their good conduct and practice of virtue, they may be chosen. I leave it to the gentleman's candor to judge what probability there is of the people choosing men of different sentiments than themselves. But great apprehensions have been raised as to the influence of the Eastern states. When you attend to circumstances, this will have no weight. I know but two or three states where there is the least chance of establishing any particular religion. The people of Massachusetts and Connecticut are mostly Presbyterian. In every other state, the people are divided into a great number of sects. In Rhode Island, the tenets of the Baptists, I believe, prevail. In New York, they are divided very much. The most numerous are the Episcopalians and the Baptists. In New Jersey, they are much divided, as we are. In Pennsylvania, if any sect prevails more than others, it is that of the Quakers. In Maryland, the Episcopalians are most numerous, though there are other sects. In Virginia, there are many sects. You all know what their religious sentiments are. So in all the southern states, they differ. As to New Hampshire, I hope, therefore, that that gentleman will see that there is no cause of fear that any religion would be exclusively established. Now, Mr. Codwell then pipes up on this topic and says, though that there some danger might arise, he imagined it might be objected to in a political as well as a religious view. In the first place, he said that there was an invitation for Jews and pagans of every kind to come to America. At some period, said he, this might endanger the character of the United States. Moreover, even those who do not regard religion altogether, the Christian religion is best calculated of all religions to make good members of society on account of its morality. I think then, added he, that in a political view, those gentlemen who formed this constitution should not have given this invitation to Jews and heathens. All those who have any religion are against the immigration of these people from the Eastern Hemisphere. And to be truthful, there were many bans on religions. The Jews were not allowed in many of the states to openly practice, and some were not even allowed to immigrate here. We will be back with Mr. Spencer's spin on this right after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
And so, you can kind of see one of the things they really haven't dived into too much is the Bill of Rights. And they will be getting into that towards the end here. At least I believe so. Abuse of powers, enumerated, commerce, amendments, and so forth. So, anyway, we might have missed it, or I might have already covered it, I should say. I know I didn't miss it. I know that they did talk a little bit about it, but there is obviously, in the North Carolina debates, a lot of focus on religion. And so Mr. Spencer says this, that he was an advocate for securing every inalienable right, and that the worshiping of God according to the dictates of conscience in particular. He therefore thought that no one particular religion should be established. Religious tests, said he, have been the foundation of persecutions in all countries. Persons who are conscientious will not take the oath regarded or required by religious tests and will therefore be excluded from offices, though equally capable of discharging them as any member of society. It is feared, continued he, that persons of bad principles, deists, atheists, and etc., may come into this country, and there is nothing to restrain them from being eligible to offices. He asked if it was reasonable to suppose that the people would choose men without regarding their character. Mr. Spencer then continued, thus, gentlemen urge that the want of a test admits the most vicious character of to offices. I desire to know what test could bind them. If there were of such principles, it would not keep them from enjoying those offices. On the other hand, it would exclude from offices conscientious and truly religious people, though equally capable as others. Conscientious persons would not take such an oath and would be therefore excluded. This would be a great cause of objection to a religious test. But in this case, as there is not a religious test required, it leaves religion on the solid foundation of its own inherent validity, without any connection with temporal authority, and no kind of oppression can take place. Excuse me. I confess it strikes me so. I am sorry to differ from the worthy gentleman. I cannot object to this part of the Constitution. I wish every other part was as good and proper. Then Governor Johnston then stood up and approved of the worthy member's candor. He admitted a possibility of Jews, pagans immigrating to the United States, yet he said that they could not be in proportion to the immigration of Christians who should come from other countries, that in all probability, the children even of such people would be Christians, and that this, with the rapid population of the United States, their zeal for religion and love of liberty, would he trusted add the progress of the Christian religion among us. And so they're not talking about white supremacy. They're actually talking about the right of conscience and ensuring that people have those fundamental rights. Now, to be clear, the Mohammedans had been and are banned at this very given time in the Republic when they're ratifying the Constitution. You can't be a citizen or immigrate to the United States if you are of Muslim descent or you believe in the Muslim doctrine. So now we get to Mr. Lenore, and he's an anti-federalist, and he makes a comment regarding the commission. And so this is his comment. Mr. Chairman, I conceive that I shall not be out of order to make some observations on this last part of the system and take some retrospective view of some other parts of it. I think it is not proper for our adoption, as I consider that it endangers our liberties. When we consider this system collectively, we must be surprised to think that any set of men who were delegated to amend the Confederation should propose to annihilate it. Now, what he's doing here is he's talking about the commission, because there were men that were delegated to amend the Confederation, and now they've provided a system that will annihilate it. At least that's his view. For that, this system are utterly different and cannot exist together. It has been said that the fullest confidence should be put in those characters who formed this Constitution. We will admit them in private and public transactions to be a good character. But, sir, it appears to me and every other member of this committee that they exceeded their powers. Those gentlemen had no sort of power to form a new constitution altogether. Neither had the citizens of this country such an idea in their view. I cannot undertake to say what principles actuated them. I must conceive they were mistaken in their politics and that this system does not secure the inalienable rights of the freemen. It has some aristocratical and monarchical features, and perhaps some of them intended the establishment of one of those governments. Whatever might be the intent, according to my views, it will lead to the most dangerous aristocracy that ever was thought of, an aristocracy established on a constitutional bottom. I conceive, and I believe most of the committee will likewise, that this is so dangerous that I should like as well as to have no constitution at all. Their powers are almost unlimited. I mean, wow, he's really out to lunch on that, isn't he? Then he goes on a little bit more and he says this: it appears to me that instead of securing the sovereignty of the states, it is calculated to melt them down into one solid empire. If the citizens of this state like a consolidated government, I hope they will have virtue enough to secure their rights. I am sorry to make use of this expression, but it appears to me to be a scheme to reduce this government into an aristocracy. It guarantees a republican form of government to the states. When all these powers are in Congress, it will only be a form. I will be past recovery when Congress has the power of the person's sword. The power of the sword is an explicit term given to it. The power of direct taxation gives the purse.
they may prohibit the trial by jury. Anyway, and he's revisiting all of these old arguments, which is most sacred and a valuable right. There is nothing contained in this Constitution to bar them from it. The federal courts have also the appeal at cognizance of the law. In fact, the sole cause of which is to deprive the people of that trial, which is an option, which it is optional in them to grant or not. We find no provision against infringement of our rights of conscience. Ecclesiastical courts may be established which will be destructive to our citizens. They make many an establishment that they think proper. They have also an exclusive legislation in their 10-mile square, to which they be added to the power over the militia, who may be carried thither and kept there for life. Well, they can't, anyway. Should anyone grumble at their acts, he would be deemed a traitor and perhaps taken up and carried to the exclusive legislation and there tried without a jury. We are told there is no cause to fear. When we consider the great powers of Congress, there is great cause to alarm. They can disarm the militia. If they were armed, they would be resources against great oppressions. The laws of the great empire and difficult to the execution of the laws of the Union were oppressive. They could not carry into effect. The people were possessed of proper means of defense. Now, he really kind of covers a very wide area of problems and arguments that had come forth. And so, anyway, now we get down to Mr. Speight in talking about, because Mr. Lenore first talked about the commission, how these delegates went off and did bad things and violated their commission, and then he got into the exclusive legislation and got into some of the other stuff. And so here's what Mr. Speight has to say regarding the commission of the delegates who went to the Constitutional Convention. Mr. Chairman, I am one of those who formed this Constitution. The gentleman says we exceeded our powers. I deny the charge. We were sent with a full power to amend the existing system. This involved every power to make every alteration necessary to meliorate and render it perfect. That's an interesting word, isn't it? And so what does it mean? There's no suggestion, so I'll have to look it up. Anyway, meliorate and render it perfect. It cannot be said that we arrogated powers altogether inconsistent with the object of the delegation. There is a clause which expressly provides for future amendments, and it is still in your power. What the convention has done is a mere proposal. It was found impossible to improve the old system without changing its very form. And so I'll leave it right there, what we'll do, because we're at the end. I'm just going to repeat this because this is really, really good in understanding what these men who went into the Constitutional Convention were really trying to do. And here is one such testimony. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.